This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to the Twin Peaks Investing Podcast. My name is Peter Higgins and you can find me at Conquest3 on Twitter. And I'm here with my good colleague at Wheelie Dealer, Pete, on Twitter. We're on Twin Peaks Investing Podcast number 53. For those of you that are new to our podcast, we are just two guys who've got over 50 years of experience in the markets, navigating them with lots of mistakes and lots of growth and lots of success. And what we try and do is just give you an overview of what we've seen in the markets over the past 2 weeks. We do this podcast every 2 weeks. We try our best to stay as objective as possible. We try and talk about what we've seen. We don't talk about our stocks with a view to ramping them down your throat so you go out there and buy them. We try and avoid all of that. So for those of you that have heard us before, thank you for coming back for some more. For those of you that are new, thank you for giving us a little try and hopefully you'll enjoy the next podcast. Pete and I are going to cover some interesting insights and some questions we've been posed as well, Pete, aren't we? How are you doing, mate?
Yeah, well, do you know what? I think I mentioned to you on the phone the other day, I'm actually feeling a hell of a lot better than I was. Hell of a lot better. I'm getting more and more days where the pain problems I've had are really low level. And as I speak to you today, it's an incredibly low level. It's almost like it's not there. So, you know, things are looking up for me on the health and the markets are treating me well. So I'm pretty happy, really.
No, I mean, that's brilliant news. And I know that all the people that follow you on Twitter will be cheered by that news as well. So I'm really, really pleased. And also, it bodes well that you'd be in fine form and action for your Wheelie Bash, which is getting ever closer.
Well, yeah, I mean, Wheelie Bash is the 4th of September, and it looks like it's going to be a hell of an event because I think we got about 15 or less spaces left now. So it's filling up a treat. And yeah, really, really pleased with the response. I mean, I think it's funny because I think last year, obviously, we had the COVID-19 situation more, you know, and I think we had something like 40 people last year. This year, you know, we're allowed to have 60 and we're going for the 60 and I reckon we'll probably do it. So
cool. No, I'm well chuffed for you, mate. You mentioned the markets have been kind and are doing okay. I mean, obviously, we're in the summer and we tend to have a bit of a lull. The markets are either, you know, flat, if not declining during the summer, but there seems to be rocking and a rolling. I noticed the markets last night, the US markets, after we took a bit of a tumble yesterday morning, actually the US markets helped us climb back to almost break even yesterday, if not up a little bit. And the S&P, this might sound bizarre, but listen to this, right?
Yeah.
The S&P 500, yeah, recorded yesterday a 100% move.
Wow.
Yeah, from its March 2020 lows.
That's mega for an index.
Yeah, I mean, that is mega. You got
so we're talking
companies.
Like not much over. I mean, you're talking what, a year and 3 or 4 months?
A year and 3 months. So they hit a low, yeah, Pete, of 2193.47.
Yeah.
And last night they hit 4386.97, almost exactly 100%. Yeah,
that's incredible.
I've not looked at what's going on with them today.
It's really funny because I've got a mate who's testing that index spread bet system that I discussed on a podcast a little while ago. I think it was like TPI 51 or something. But I'm testing it on the FTSE 100. And so far for me, I'm still underwater on it because it's pretty much not really done much on the FTSE 100 since when I opened. But my mate who's doing the S&P 500 is absolutely booming. And he's like, he can't believe how well it's going. So, yeah, fair play.
No, I think it goes back to the adage of if you've got the right quality stocks or you're traversing the right index,
mm.
and you buy, hold, add on dips, etc., etc., you should do okay. I think it's when you're buying poorer quality stocks, Pete. Yeah,
it's
there's many
quality.
A stock, including some that I own, that haven't rebounded as healthily as the S&P 500. I'm thinking, well, surely you should be able to compete against the S&P 500, but they haven't.
It's scary, isn't it?
So if you're buying poorer quality stocks, mate, what chance have you got for a rebound of 100%? You've got no chance.
So true. I mean, I was quite surprised today because I was reading Investors Chronicle, the latest copy. I don't know why. Well, it all got a bit weird for me this weekend because normally my copy of Investors Chronicle falls on the mat. I haven't got a mat, but I don't know why I say that. But it falls on the floor, right? My copy of Investors Chronicle falls on the floor, usually Friday morning. And for some weird reason, it didn't turn up until Monday, which is really unusual. But it meant I didn't have it to read over the weekend. And I didn't, you know, fancy looking on the tablet and reading the online version. So I'd far rather do it on the paper. And so I didn't really start looking at it until probably today, where I've actually seriously looked at it. And one of the things I noticed in there was they had like AO World, AO dot, and they had Ocado, OCDO. And I hadn't realized how much those charts have fallen since their peaks. And it comes back to what you're saying about quality, but it's also the thing that I keep saying, that valuation is always important. If you buy things on incredibly high valuations, don't be surprised when they have in price, because it's going to happen to you.
I'm going to touch on that a bit later on, Pete, when we go back to talking about strategies. It's very, very important you watch valuation. That's why I'm always looking for an element or a margin of safety regarding what I'm buying. I'm not going to chase stocks. I'm not going to chase what all the herd are buying. I'd rather buy the stuff that the herd are ignoring. But yeah, most definitely, Pete.
I think it's a lot of that where people got herded into stocks, you know, 6 months ago, whatever, and now they're all finding that, you know, just having a follow somebody else strategy into very overpriced stocks doesn't actually work that well.
It doesn't work very well, and it goes back to what we were saying before, mate. My concern really is that, you know, whilst I keep saying to people, you know, do your own research, yes, some people haven't got the time to do it, and whatever it be, time constraints or ill health, people always find the time to find someone to follow. So find the time to follow somebody, I think you can find that additional 5-10 minutes to do some research of your own. And then, you know, when that stock capitulates, you haven't got anyone but to blame but yourself. You know, if you've taken 10 minutes to find that person to follow to copy their stock, you're then going to be blaming them, you know.
Interesting, because I think the way I do things is actually quite simplistic. And I've actually had several people have said to me, you know, I like the way you do things because actually your approach is quite simple. And it's a bit like, I've said this before many a time, that in a way, a lot of my research and my analysis is really like a longitudinal thing where I'm just building up this mental database in my head where I know of these stocks for years and years and years. And after a while, you get to learn which are stocks that tend to do pretty well, whoever the management is, or stocks that have got good management and that good management is still there and you know, it's a good company as well. And you sort of build this database. And because you're doing that, it sort of makes the specific research just before you buy a stock, actually, it doesn't take that long, you know, because you've already pretty sure you're going to buy it anyway. And if you're sticking to quality stocks, then 9 times out of 10, as long as you've got a diverse portfolio of them and different strategies, I think, is important. I like the idea that I don't just have momentum stocks. I mean, I love that when people, you know, you get people who say, oh, you know, I've got a diverse portfolio. What I mean is, they've got 20 momentum stocks. That's not diverse. That is 20 stocks heading in the same direction. As soon as momentum goes out of favor, they learn that that's actually not a sustainable system. So I think it's good to have a mix of strategies. So for instance, I'll have stocks that are income stocks that I just hold for the big dividends. I'll have stocks that are recovery stocks where I think they've got really beaten up and I think they can recover, which is very much the approach that you outlined in TPI 52, I think, Pete. And then the other one is like just pure growth stocks or whatever. But the thing that the common factor on all of them is on all of them, the valuation must make sense. If the valuation doesn't make sense, there is no way I'm going to buy it.
Absolutely, I absolutely agree with you, mate. I mean, it goes back to that famous quote, the bit that you were talking about at the beginning, about compounding. A lot of people talk about compounding interest, and Einstein was basically saying compounding interest is the eighth wonder of the world. He who understands it earns it, and he who doesn't pays it. I think the compounding element that I think a lot of people forget, which is what you've touched on, is that you're compounding your knowledge.
Oh, yeah.
10 minutes you spend researching something or reading something or learning something new, added to that other 10 minutes you spent previously or added to that other hour you spent previously, you're compounding your knowledge. And that database that you talk about, Pete, you're building and building and building. So actually, when you see X, Y, and Z, you can just dot the I's, as one of my good friends on Twitter always talks about. Claudio H. Fox, hopefully you're in the garden listening right now.
Hi, Claudio.
Yeah, so, you know, you're compounding the knowledge, Pete. Yeah, compounding, compounding, compounding. The biggest way to learn and to get better at something is to compound your knowledge and your learning. And if you can do that in any walk or any career of your life, yeah, you will become better and better and better at it. I mean, it's that thing whereby we're pulled out of the womb, right?
Yeah.
And we eventually we learn to toddle.
Dragged out.
Then we eventually learn to walk. Then we eventually learn to run. At some point, whether someone decides, you know, male or female, I want to be a pilot. I want to be an astronaut. You're then going to put all those hours into learning how to be a pilot or an astronaut. You can't just become a successful investor by copying somebody else who's a pilot or an astronaut or the equivalent of in investing.
Yeah. It's like trying to be a pilot by just seeing people fly on Twitter.
Absolutely. You can't just watch a video on it. You've got to go there and put the hours in. But going back, Pete, I want you to touch on something here because we covered the S&P being up 100%, didn't we? And the FTSE I need to get this date right, March the 23rd of 2020, Pete.
Yeah.
So its lowest value of 2020. Yeah.
Yeah.
4,993.89. Right.
Okay.
Now, bear in mind that the S&P was a much larger index, is up 100%.
Mm-hmm.
The FTSE 100 is currently sitting at 7,127.4. Yeah?
So what's that, about 50%, is it?
Less than 50%, mate.
Wow, that's amazing. See, my logic, because I've always said with my index spread bet system, that the S&P 500 would probably be the best one to use over time. But I felt we were in an unusual situation at the moment where the S&P 500 is arguably overvalued because of tech valuations being so bonkers. But the FTSE 100 was actually artificially low. So I thought the FTSE 100 would do an element of catch up. But as it happens, I mean, I've only been running the test system for like 3 weeks or 4 weeks. So, you know, we shouldn't draw too many conclusions from that. But that was my sort of logic for thinking the FTSE 100 for maybe a couple of years would be a good index to use. But actually, to be fair, I mean, it's quite handy that I'm doing the FTSE 100, my mate's doing the S&P 500, and there's some other friends doing similar. At least it will give us a good comparison as to which ones probably do work best or whatever.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, Pete. I think what I would caveat that with is the fact that, you know, the markets will always, you know, I say this, you know, loosely,
yeah,
will always surprise you and make a fool out of every single one of us, you know.
Oh, all the time, they'll do.
And this is the problem that we all face. Since the March lows, the FTSE 100 is up 30.8%, Pete. Yeah. The FTSE All Share is up 37%. Yeah, 30.1%. FTSE 250, which is the go-to index for me at the minute, so many great stocks in there to choose from, is up 61.7%.
Wow.
Yeah, but we've mentioned this before, and this is what, you know, I know you knock it, Pete, and you have a pop at a lot of the rampers of AIM and all the rest of it, but some of the stocks on AIM are actually causing it to fly, and the rebound on the FTSE AIM All Share Index is 97.7% up from the March lows.
So the high risk game stuff,
yep,
has nearly done as well as the S&P 500.
S&P 500, yep.
That's bonkers, isn't it? What have you got it there for the small caps, FTSE small caps?
FTSE small caps. Let me have a look, mate. Let me have a look and see what's happening.
That's been good.
FTSE small cap. What's it done? It has done. Yep. 86.55p.
Okay, not as good as AIM then.
Not as good as AIM, but you've got the security and less volatility with the small caps.
Yeah.
You know, and you've got to remember as well, you've got a significant number of AIM stocks, which if they were to say overnight, you know, we're going to transfer to the FTSE, some of them would be in the FTSE 250p. Odd one or two maybe even make the FTSE 100.
Yeah.
A lot of them would be in the FTSE All Share, you know?
Oh, there's a lot of skew in how these indexes are made up. And that's, you know, one of the reasons FTSE 100 has sort of lagged a bit. Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, the other one that's done well is the DAX. I mean, I noticed that the DAX last night, I think it did a new all-time high last night. Which, you know, that's the German DAX, yeah?
Yeah,
it's only 30 stocks. But
I tend not to look at the DAX. I'm not sure why. I should maybe look at it a bit more often.
I tend to look at sort of all of them, because global indexes, major indexes, are so closely correlated. And so quite often you can get a sense that FTSE 100, you know, our market is going to go up simply because the US is up, the European markets are up, the Japanese markets are, you know, everything's up. It's like, well, okay, we're probably going to get dragged up with it. And that so often happens.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I'm not sure if I've got the right index here, Pete, but I'm looking for the Germany index on FTSE.
Yeah.
And it's saying that it's up 58% since the March lows, 56.
Yes, that's believable, really.
Yeah. So that's not too bad. I mean, it's only 30. Is it 30?
An index.
DAX 30?
Yeah, it's 30. So if you think about it, it's the 30 biggest stocks in Germany.
Yeah.
Up 58%. I mean, that's pretty stunning,
it's
really.
Pretty good, mate. Some big companies there.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but I mean, it brings us back to this classic question of, are the markets overvalued? And I mean, I'm not sure they are. I think there's pockets of the Nasdaq that look really overvalued. And I am worried, and I keep saying this, I think through the summer, where we are now, I think we're going to keep grinding like we are. I don't think there will be a big sell-off, because that's very unusual in the summer. But what worries me is once we get to autumn and we get towards the back end of August and into September, October, so often there's a big fall. And, you know, we're talking 10%. And I think that's highly possible this year. But then what tends to happen is it then recovers through the winter months, and chances are we'll probably go on to even higher all-time highs than we are now, because, you know, the winter always tends to be very good.
I agree with you. There's two things that could help with that, but then there's a fly in the ointment as well, Pete, that I want to talk about. What could help it was the news that we had. You know, we spoke about the banks getting a little bit of a pick-me-up or a fillip from the government, basically saying that the lockdown caveats that they had put in place about not paying out dividends.
Yeah.
They've now been lifted, Pete. Yeah. So
yeah, I heard that. Yeah.
Yeah. So the likes of Lloyds, I think it's Barclays and NatWest, they're going to have a bit of more freedom now to decide how much they want to distribute to their shareholders via their profits. So that could be quite good in a sense of, you know, the uncertainty around the banking sector has been removed. So the Bank of England has essentially said, you know, we're going to curb these restrictions. You can start doing and paying dividends again and share buybacks, Pete. So it enables the likes of Lloyds, Barclays and NatWest to decide how much they want to give back. And that could be quite good. I think people will start looking at those three banks again. And if they start paying a reasonable dividend, you know, I would dare say some people decide, you know what, rather than leaving it in the bank and earning 0.1%, I'll actually buy shares in the bank and earn 2% or more, or whatever they start off with.
Yeah,
so that could be quite interesting. But I'm still not a big fan of bank banks. I'd rather just buy the insurance stocks. So I've got a couple of those instead regarding
Yeah,
that.
I'm the same. I've got HSBC, whatever it is. I've got that in my income portfolio, and I think I might have another position of it as well. And I've also got Standard Chartered, yeah. Both have been really lackluster, and but I sort of think with both of those that there are reasons to think that they could actually recover quite nicely. So I'm sort of in no desperate rush to dump them. But equally, I certainly wouldn't be buying any more of them. Do you know what I mean? I can't get excited about them.
This is a quick hello to you, our valued Twin Peaks Investing Podcast listener. Whatever channel you're listening to, please make sure to subscribe and you'll always be the first to get the new episodes. Thank you for your continued support.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing. We're in this period now where there's a lot of expectation coming up to Freedom Day, which is less than a week away now. Especially in the UK, despite
freedom, that's funny.
Yeah, freedom. Yeah. It's just what it's
like.
It's like
We're allowed
anger,
to be
isn't it? You can
free.
take our freedom, but you can't. Yeah, there's all that sort of stuff going on. But yeah, I mean, I've been enjoying my freedoms, mate. I was away on holiday last week with the bosses, and just chilling out. So yeah, so really, really enjoyed that down in Devon. But I think going back to the markets, Pete, that. The fly in the ointment for me at the minute is if anybody wants to do this and go and find various different charting tools to find it, or even use SharePad to find it, is the S&P 500 PE ratio right now, Pete. It's above 46, right? As of last night, it was 46.58.
I heard on, I think it was CNBC last night, some geezer on there. I don't very often listen to it because I find a lot of it quite noisy. But there was this guy on there and he was saying the S&P 500 is on a forward PE of 22, which actually isn't that mad. So, yeah, the historic 46 looks ridiculous, yeah? But a forward of 22 actually isn't. I think he said the normal forward PE is about 18, so it's out of line with where it would normally be, but it's not like massively out of line. So again, that backs the idea that if we are going to get a sell-off, it may not be until the autumn when we quite often have a sell-off. I mean, it's funny because I'm not into these, market conspiracy theories, right? It's one of the things that I hear so much of it, and I just think it's a load of old nonsense, right? People saying, oh, yeah, this is all manipulated, nothing, yeah, whatever. But one that I do wonder about, that's a bit of a conspiracy theory, is I can't help thinking that city institutions, the city, something, engineers a drop in the autumn so that fund managers who've all been on their yachts and having a holiday, whatever they do, playing golf, through the summer, yeah, and paying very little attention to the portfolios they should be managing, they all come back and they're like, oh, sugar, we need to make our performance look better for the end of the year. So it's almost like a sort of engineered dip that causes the markets to drop. It means that some of these fund managers can dump stocks that they're a bit embarrassed that they hold. It gives them an opportunity to buy stocks they want to have a load cheaper. And then, funnily enough, the market rallies and they can post good numbers on December the 31st. But that's a complete conspiracy theory. It's probably utterly false. I'm not saying it's true. Just ignore anything I say, basically.
The interesting thing for me, mate, is that we're in a situation where we've got to acknowledge that the reason why, I mean, I'm not just saying the US markets, but a lot of the markets are near the highs or have recovered so quickly is because of all of the coordinated intervention that's taken place, Pete, since that March hit. There's been so much money being thrown at the market. There's been so much money thrown at furlough. There's been so many people at home saving
Oh,
oodles and oodles of money. And
yeah.
then deciding, you know what, let me get into the markets, let me start investing in the market because my bank is paying me diddly squat in interest.
I think that is, I mean, the one that I'm not convinced by, I mean, everybody says that stock markets are driven up by QE, quantitative easing. I don't think that can be proved. I think if we didn't have QE, we don't have a world where there's no QE, so we don't know what would have happened if there wasn't QE. All we know is that QE helped to stabilize liquidity in the financial system back in March 2020. That's about all we can be fairly sure of, yeah?
Well, it's been around longer than that, Pete. I mean, the
Yeah, it
problem.
has, but the point is, we don't know the counterfactual. What would have happened if there was no QE? Would the markets have gone up? I suspect they would have done because you'd still have had very low interest rates. So,
They would have, I
I
agree,
don't
they would
know.
have gone up eventually, Pete, but I don't think it would have gone up as sharply. Because you remember, we're all, you, me, and everybody else were just in complete disarray last March at the speed of that particular
Well,
crash.
yeah. Well, I think the extra liquidity pumped into the system saved the markets then. I've
Yeah,
got
but
no question about that.
and the point I'm making is,
Yeah.
I don't think without that liquidity being added, yeah, and that, additional stimulus being added to the markets, that recovery would not have happened as sharply and as quickly as it
Oh
has
no,
done.
I totally
And
agree that.
the problem we've got now is that if and when it's muted that they're going to take away the punch bowl, the drip feed of stimulus in the markets are going to go and caveat that with the fact that we're now talking about inflation. Every time I mention inflation, every other time we mention inflation, sorry, the market takes a dip. Next day they mention inflation, the market doesn't take a hit.
Yeah.
So I don't know. The volatility is going to stay there, and I think this goes back to the importance of buying quality stocks, and that's why I've been moving further and further up the food chain to FTSE 250 and FTSE 100 stocks, of late, because I suspect the markets at some point are going to have to have a breather, Pete. We could go
Well,
higher, but what if the markets take a breather? And it's taken a bit of a breather now because it's not really gone much in the past 2 weeks, if not month. And people are complaining already that their portfolios have dropped consecutive days down 1%, 0.5%. And I'm thinking, well, nothing's happened yet. So are they buying inferior quality stocks, or it's just stocks that were highly momentum and highly high growth stocks that got overpriced and overvalued in the first place? I don't know.
I think that's a huge. I mean, like I said, I think the impact of QE over the last 10 years, whatever, I think is really unprovable. I think what's really driven the markets that we can be pretty sure of is very low interest rates. I think that's been a key factor. There's been a lot of people who couldn't get a return on cash in their bank account, so they've been forced to enter into the market to buy stock. So I think that's a big driver. I think, as you say, money like furlough checks, whatever, stimulus checks being given to individuals in America, that was a massive boost for the markets, I think. But I think the other thing is the simple fact that people haven't been able to spend money. And you've got one of the big things that's driven these low quality things is the sheer number of new people who think they're investors or new people who think they're traders. That have driven the markets up to absolutely insane levels in many assets. And I think that has been a really important factor. And we're seeing that on AIM, we're seeing it on, I mean, crypto is the biggest farce ever known to man. And all sorts of stuff like that that's just got utterly ridiculous. Like a lot of the tech stocks in America that have never made any money are probably never going to make any money. And so there's all that kind of stuff. So there's so many factors at play, which comes back to what I always say, keeping it simple. I tend to cut out a lot of this noise. Fundamentally, I'm not really that bothered about what drives the indexes and whatever. What matters is what the chart of the index is telling me, because the charts will give me loads of clues as to when it's going to roll over, and that's the time I need to get a hedge in.
Okie dokie. I mean, the thing for me, Pete, is that I'm looking at all of the different data that's out there, and I'm looking at various content that's out there as well. And there is an absolutely baffling article, and this will chime with you, Pete. It goes back about a week ago. The Times, right? The Times business page, right?
Yeah.
And
I'm baffled why people read the Times. Does that help?
careful, careful.
Careful, careful.
Is basically saying, right, and this is data from the FCA, Pete, right, that 2.3 million UK adults own cryptocurrency. And obviously there's lots of different elements of cryptocurrency. But this is from data, 828,000 of them hadn't a clue what it was when they bought it, and 483,000 still don't. That's what the survey found.
Incredible. I bet you out of 2.3 million, at least 2.2 million don't really know what they've bought.
And that's in the Times. I've done a proper survey, mate.
Hilarious.
It's not like you do these little quick polls on Twitter and 100 people reply. That's a proper survey commissioned by Oxford Risk, a specialist behavioural finance group. You know, that to me is staggering. This goes back to know what you own. Do some research. Find out. Don't just jump and follow people.
I
believe the blockchain technology will be something major, a bit like the internet going forward.
Absolutely.
But these cryptos, I don't know which one's going to be a winner. And people are throwing money left, right and centre in every single one. And then they're getting scammed as well. You know.
Oh, scammed. Mate, have we got time for me to
You get... talk about your scam, mate. You
talk yeah, let's talk about my scam.
I want to talk about your strategy a bit after we finish this bit.
Yeah.
Go for it.
Yeah, I mean, this is just the classic. Right, let me try and get my bearings. Yeah, so basically what happens, right? One day I'm like, you know, posting some stuff on Twitter or whatever, and my timeline's there, and I see a tweet from Michael Broom Smith. He's a good guy, Michael. Hello, Michael. You're right. I think he's at M Broom Smith or something on Twitter. Anyway, he put out this tweet, and it said, oh, I've just been in touch with this guy at Gary Newman or something like that, yeah. And it said, he started chatting to me like he was a normal guy, just like a normal private investor. And then he's trying to sell me something, trying to sell me his trading course. And I'm reading this and I'm thinking, I know that Gary Newman. I mean, I don't know him well, but I know of him. I think I've even said hello to him at a show once. And I'm thinking, he don't sound like someone doing that. What's he up to? And I have a look at the thing, at his profile, you know, on the link that Michael Broom Smith had put out. And it's got this like link, and I go to the profile, and the guy's got like two followers or something, or one follower. And I'm thinking, Gary Newman can't have one follower. The guy's been around for a million years. He must have thousands. I just can't understand that at all. So I thought, let's follow him and see what this is all about, you know. So I follow the geezer. Needless to say, not long after, I get a DM with this person purporting to be Gary Newman, who, as you'll find out, wasn't Gary Newman. And he says, oh, how's your portfolio doing? I said, oh, yeah, I'm doing all right, thanks, mate, you know. And he's like, it was just like a normal, nice conversation with this guy. And I'm thinking, let's see where this goes. And then after a while, he's like, oh, well, I'm doing cryptocurrencies and I'm making a fortune. And I thought, right, I've got it. I've got you now, I thought. So what I did is I replied back. And I mean, I could look it on Twitter, but I can't bother. But basically, I said something like, I said crypto. I said, you're having a laugh, mate. You must be barking mad. I said, that stuff's worth zero. I said, you're absolutely off your head. And he sort of replies back saying, oh, well, you know, I'm making millions and all the rest of it, you know. And he sort of goes on. I just say, oh, you're talking nonsense. And then he said something like, oh, well, you know, if you just sign up for my course or sign up for my trading thing or something. And, you know, only a couple of grand, you know. And I'm thinking, you barking or what? I'm going to give you 2,000 quid. You must be absolutely off your tree. And I sort of write back to him. I said, look, mate, I said, you're absolutely bonkers. You're barking mad. And these are the sort of words I use. And I said, look, you're really off it. I said, what you should be doing, instead of all this nonsense you're talking about, you should be listening to our podcast. You should be following me on Twitter. You should be reading my blogs. You should be learning how to properly make money so that you don't have to keep, you know, ripping people off or whatever it was. Do you know what? I've never heard from him since. I thought you'd like that.
Oh, my gosh. There are some really dodgy people out there, Pete. You know?
It's unbelievable. But the thing that I want to warn people about is that there are loads of people. I mean, this guy, Gary Newman, it had the actual Gary Newman's photo on his fig. And obviously, they've just changed the name slightly. So, for all I know, there could be some scam artist who calls himself At Wheelie Dealer One or whatever it is. And he's probably scamming now, making out he's me. And well, I mean, people are going to figure straight away when he's trying to sell them crypto. But just look out for these because there's loads of these scams going on. You've got to be so, don't ever sign up to anything from someone who you don't know who they are, who just contacted you 2 or 3 days ago. You're just going to lose money. It's madness. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I saw a similar one, Pete, with Bill at stock, at Dosh 100 Stock Whittler, and I pointed it out to him, and somebody had just created the same account and copied lots of Bill's tweets, and called himself at Dosh 1000, I think it was, or something like that, and I
God.
was like, oh my gosh, you know what I mean?
Oh,
And
it's terrible.
the problem now is that, or maybe not a problem for Bill, but. For other people that ordinarily would see Bill's stuff, that account is, I think, is locked it temporarily. So it does create a bit of a more, bit more of a nuisance, especially if people start thinking you're not being as credible as you are because they don't realize that it's a fake account that's parodying your account, you know?
Well, that's the trouble. And, people just need to be really careful. Just, the thing is with people like Peter and me, we've been around forever. People know us, they can come and meet me at the Wheelie Bash. And, I never say to someone, give me thousands of pounds worth of money or whatever. It's just not going to happen. And I just honestly, these people, they're just low life scum, basically, aren't
Not good, Pete. Not good. Now, Pete, I
Yeah.
wanted to focus a little bit on the strategies. We covered the strategy in the last podcast. Thank you, ladies and gents, for your feedback, which was really, really positive regarding Pete and I sharing some of the stuff that we do and how we find stocks. I've been asked a couple of questions about my strategy. I'm going to expand on that a bit later on, but we're going to get back into it a little bit more, and Pete's going to talk a bit more about how he goes from not having that stock to ending up buying that stock. So, do you want to go with that, Pete?
Yeah, I mean, I sort of covered a fair bit of I think on TPI 52, yeah, the last podcast. But really, it's like I sort of say that I really I find ideas everywhere, all over the place, and it's stupid things like, just you'll be watching some TV program or something, and they'll mention that pet ownership is going up, and you sort of think, pet ownership's going up. Well, that's going to be good for pets at home, isn't it? And you make these kind of connections in your head, sort of thing, and whatever. And so, just from living your life, you go to a supermarket or you go to a shopping mall or something, and you see what shops are busy or you see what shops are new or whatever. And all this stuff sort of feeds into your database in your brain. I think one of the big sources for me is every morning I read through at seven, well, at about,
You're never up at 7 o'clock.
yeah, I
Don't
was
you
going to
dare
say
say
that's
7 o'clock, Pete.
I'm lying through my teeth here. I think about 8:15, I start looking at the RNS updates for the day, and I look at my own stocks first that I already hold because they're like the priority. And I start looking through, working from the earliest one at 7 o'clock, and I tend to do it on Investigate, which is like a free website. It's a bit sort of comes and goes in how reliable it is, and sometimes I have to use the LSE, London Stock Exchange one. You can get it on SharePad, and the reason I don't do it on SharePad is that on my small tablet, I don't like reading it on my small tablet. Anyway. So I tend to work through the RNSs, and I tend to these days I ignore most of the mining ones and resources ones, unless there's one I'm not really aware of, and I think, what's that? And invariably I open it up and think, oh God, why did I bother reading that? But I look for quality stocks and stocks I don't really know and whatever. And I just see what kind of updates they're putting out and what they're doing and what results they've got. And I usually tweet this stuff out on Twitter. And that quite often I find ideas from that, because I'm I bought Sophie on SPE a few weeks ago. And the thing with Sophion is that I've been reading these RNSs for probably 2, 3 years on Sophion, and I could see how the company was sort of gradually improving and doing more and more stuff, and how the product was developing and things like that. And it's sort of, and you sort of you get a picture in your brain of what the company's doing and how the company's progressing, and. And after a while, you'll be fixed on that company or whatever, and you read things in Investors Chronicle or in Shares Magazine. You look at the numbers on SharePad and all sorts of stuff, and you just sort of think, well, this is quite an interesting business. And I tend to write these companies that I find interesting. I write them down in my little black book, which is literally a little black book. And I put that gets put onto my website, and the exact text that's in my book I put onto the website. But I don't do it every day, obviously, because it just takes a while. But I probably do that once a month or something. So people can see all the ideas that I'm really looking at, and I even asterisk and put stars on the ones that I think could look really good. So for instance, Sophion, I'm sure if you looked on the little black book, you'd see Sophion appear quite a few times on that list, and it would probably always have a star on it or whatever. But that's a really big source. I think that's becoming more of a source in recent years. I think before that, I used to get a lot of ideas more from Investors Chronicle and reading things in Investors Chronicle and thinking, what is that a good stock or whatever. I don't really follow tips. I mean, I'm quite happy to have bought a stock nice and cheap, and then someone else tips it when it's higher up. I don't complain at that. I know not a lot of people don't seem to like that, which I find strange. So following tips is rarely a good idea. Sometimes it can work, but 9 times out of 10, tips are a bit late anyway. But I just find ideas everywhere. And do you know what? I'm not. Even I talked earlier about income stocks, recovery stocks, growth stocks. I'm not particularly tied to any particular strategy. It's like, yeah, I want to have a mix of income and growth and recovery and whatever. But I also want a mix of sectors. Diversification is a really important thing for me in my portfolio. So I'm always looking when I'm thinking about a new stock, I'm thinking, well, what does that bring to the portfolio party? Does that help the diversification? Does it hinder the diversification? Is it just repeating a stock I've already got? I mean, for instance, right, I hold Pets at Home, Pets, yeah, PETS, and it's done lovely for me. But it's like I often look at CVS Group, CVSG, hashtag CVSG. I think CVSG is a really good company. But the thing is, it's like a vet business. And I'm thinking, well, what's the point of me buying CVSG? Because I've already got pets. There's no point of duplicating. So I wouldn't buy it. I mean, sometimes I might have duplicated when there's something really special, two things that are really special. But generally speaking, I don't see the point in duplicating, says he holding Glaxo and
Yes.
AstraZeneca. But that's a bit silly. But anyway, so in many ways, like for instance, I'm reading Investors Chronicle, for instance, and I might read about a stock and I might think, well, is that stock gonna go higher? Could that stock be up 50%, up 100% in the next year? And if I think it could, and if I can see sensible reasons as to why it would do that, then I'll probably write it down in my little black book and have a think about it, But I don't tend to really get serious about buying something until I can see that I've got a spare slot in my portfolio. So I'm allowed, with my current rules, I'm allowed, say, 40 stocks, the WD-40, 40 stocks in my portfolio. At the moment, I think I've got 39 or 38. But it's like, so I need to have a spare slot, and I can't go over 40. I can't have 41. But I also need cash. So if I don't have any cash and I don't have any slots, then I'm not really looking for anything. You know, there's just no point. It's like I've got loads of good companies. I've fought hard when I bought the stock in the first place. I've got to give the things time to play out. You know, just let them do their thing, and they sort of take care of themselves, really. And it's like only once. So say, for instance, at the moment, right? Well, I'll give you an example from quite recently. I think it was when I bought Sophie on. I think what happened, I might be wrong on this, but I think it was Kin and Carter, KCT, that I'd done really well on, and the shares had gone up and up and up and up, and I was so pleased with it. And but it became obvious to me that I had a lot of them. You know, the weighting in my portfolio was getting pretty meaty, and I thought the valuation was getting quite stretched, you know. Now, I've sort of changed in recent years because if something used to have a really high valuation, I would sell it. But I've sort of learned over the years that that's actually not the best idea. The best idea is to top slice it, just take a bit off it. So you've lowered your risk, but the thing is, you're still in the game. Because quite often, a company that's on a really high rating, that's a proper quality company, whatever, they're on a high rating because so often they actually beat expectations and they actually end up going higher. So I tend not to, you know, sell the whole lot in one go. But anyway, because I could see, probably a couple of weeks in advance, I could see that I was probably going to have to top slice KCT soon. It got me thinking, well, that's going to free me up some cash. What does that enable me to buy? So then I start seriously looking, and I'm looking in my little black book, or I'm just using my brain. I mean, I could probably, off the top of my head now, I could probably say, you know, probably list five stocks or whatever that I really like that are probably worth buying. Don't ask me to, because I won't be able to. But yeah, so you know, so I don't. So for a lot of the time, I really am doing nothing, in that I sort of just leave it alone and let the portfolio do its own thing.
I think, Pete, that is a great strategy about leaving things alone. Buy some good stocks and let them just do what they needed to do. There's a brilliant quote by the one of the best investors of all time, Peter Lynch, right? And he sits with you, Pete. Another Peter quote in here: the best
Well,
stocks are
yes,
people.
it's for all of us, mate. It's like
There you go.
triple Pete's investing.
And his quote goes as this, Pete: my best stocks have been the third year, the fourth year, the fifth year I've owned them. It's not the third week, the fourth week. People want their money very rapidly. It doesn't happen.
I think that's so true, you know. I really do believe that.
But that's
And I
what we've
think.
got. We've got momentum people, we've got traders, we've got scalpers, we've got people doing all kinds of different things. But I wanted to touch on a stock, Pete, that I don't think you've probably looked at much, but has done exceptionally well from the March lows. And it sits with your thing of you don't want to be in the same sector, but you're almost in the same sector, but not, okay?
Okay.
And this stock, I've had my eye on it forever, and for whatever reason, I've never got round to buying it. And it's so frustrating because it's one of them stocks you think it'll come down, it'll have a blip, it'll come back, and I'll be able to buy it at some point. And I've always liked it, but I've never bought it, and still to this day. And yesterday they came out with results, and I went, oh, right. And that stock, Pete, is Dechra Farm.
Oh, DPH, mate.
DPH, right?
Mate,
Is a
give me a break. I
yeah.
used to own it about 8 years ago, and I'm an
Oh
idiot.
my gosh! Oh,
I'm an
sorry,
idiot because I sold
sorry,
it.
sorry, Pete. Sorry, one that got away.
Oh, did it?
Yeah. So I'm gonna throw you under the bus now and say you are,
I'm an idiot.
you were
Yeah.
barking mad to sell it. So that's my pun gone. Right. Okay. So this is a global veterinary pharmaceuticals company, Pete. So they're delivering all of that pharma to the health of pets sector. Does that make sense?
And they do horses and farm stuff as
Well,
well, I
a
think.
horse is a pet. Yeah.
Livestock,
They do all manner of different things.
yeah, pigs
They
are pets, obviously.
hit an all-time high, Pete,
Stop
yesterday.
it. I don't want to know.
I'm going to carry on. I'm going to just explain because
I
other
don't
people
want
might
to
still
know,
be
mate.
interested in it. Bear
Oh,
with me, mate. Bear
you're
with me.
killing me.
So they're sitting at 47 quid at the minute. They're up from the March
Oh,
lows. of March the 23rd. They're up 94%, Pete. So they're up there with the S&P, mate. That's how much of an outperformance that has had. Yeah,
that's stunning.
And the beauty, what I love about it, Pete, similar to the other unloved and untalked about stocks, yeah, is that it's outperforming the likes of Games Workshop, BOTB, you know, year to date, and all the rest of it. It's outperforming all these stocks that everyone loves to talk about and say, "Oh, this is going to the moon." It's sitting there, no one talks about it, mate.
I've never heard anyone mention DPH.
And it's there up 94% from the March lows, and it's sitting at an all-time high, mate.
I'll stop it. Do you know what? I'm probably wrong, but I seriously think I bought it at £6 and I sold it at £8. I'm probably wrong.
Well, the five-year chart goes from 12.50-ish, and it's sitting at 47 now, Pete. So if you'd held on to that, mate, you'd have a spare car in your garage, mate. I think.
Oh, do you know? It just pains me so much.
It happens to all of us, mate. This is the thing, right? You and I will talk about the mistakes we've made, mate. You will now talk about selling things too early. You know, the one that's ticking me off at the minute because of the slump of March and April of last year was Reach. I remember sitting at Mello, and people were asking about, you know, what stocks would you recommend, and I was like, no, I don't really do tips and recommend stocks. And I said, oh, you know what? Some one to research would be Reach. And I think it was like 40 or 50 pence. Today it hit £3.06, less than 2 years later, mate. Yeah. And I've already sold it long gone. I'm gone now. It's not going to traverse the tech and the digital as well as Future did. And it just keeps looking at me going, ha ha, bye bye, Conkers, bye bye. You know,
just waving as it runs away.
I made a chunk of change out of buying it, but I sold it too early, Pete. And it happens, mate.
And do you know, the thing that really kills us on those is that if you have a, say for instance, right, let's just talk about a hypothetical theoretical portfolio, right? So it doesn't matter. Say it had 20 stocks, right? If you say all of those stocks start off the same size, yeah? So say it's £1,000 in each one, right? What actually happens over time is that the duffers, the really rubbish ones, that £1,000, so say in 5 years down the road, whatever, that £1,000 will be down to £50. Yeah, it'll be terrible on the duffers, right? But what will happen with the absolute beauty ones, like the Decras, yeah? That £1,000 in 5 years, that £1,000 will have probably grown to like £6,000. And what it means is that every year when you're working out your numbers, the effect of the losers gets smaller and smaller on the overall effect on your portfolio. And the effect of the winners gets bigger and bigger on the effect of your portfolio. So it's like, how can I describe it another way? So if you've got a fat, say you've got £1,000 and it drops to £500, yeah? If that falls 2%, 2% of £500 is like a tenner, right? So it's got a £10 negative impact on your portfolio when it falls from 500 by 2%. But if your big winner that's already up to £3,000, that goes up 2%. So it's the same move, it's a 2% move. But 2% of £3,000 is £60. So you're losing £10 on the rubbish one, but you're gaining £60 on the big winner. So it's like there's a sort of natural mechanism within a portfolio where the winners look after themselves and the losers become less of a problem to you. And a lot of people don't understand.
I agree, Pete, but you can accelerate that performance, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Two ways. The easiest one, which we all struggle with, is knowing when to sell the duffers, right? And we all can improve on that. The other thing is, if you've got some good ones in your portfolio that are winners and are doing reasonably okay, they don't have to shoot the doors off. But if they're up 10, 15% a year, or even less than that, and they're able to generate 3 to 4% dividend, you can compound that 10% total return, yeah? And every 7 years, you've doubled the value of that particular stock or your old, all the entirety of your portfolio. So you cut your winners when you can see the change, they become, you know, the cyclical changes in, or they become overvalued, you start to top slice it a little bit. Yeah, or the news comes out and you see that warning sign, and you see, you know, you're looking for warning signs all the time to say, look, it's time to get out of this stock, it's time to get out of this stock. And you cut it. Don't wait for it to go down 99% to go, oh, it's not worth me selling it anymore. You know, and equally, when it's got up, if I was you and I'd been holding Dekra now from £8, yeah, up to, what did you say, Pete? From,
was it 47 they went to, didn't they, or something?
Yeah. From eight quid up to 13 quid you sold, right? If you'd held it from £8 up to 47, you would have been trimming it already, Pete. I'm sure you would.
Yeah.
You know, because
I would have been trimming a bit off, yeah.
Yeah, so it would have gone from 1% of your portfolio, 1.5% of your portfolio, to 7% of your portfolio or 8%. You would have gone, ooh, you know what?
I'd have sliced a bit, yeah.
You'd have sliced it, and that's the sensible thing to do.
Absolutely.
What you would have done on top of that is that you reinvested that other top slice into another stock that you're thinking, actually, that's not doing too bad at the minute. I'll add to that. And that's what you'd call compounding. I'm always looking, that 500% return I've had on that stock, yeah? Or that 2,700% return I've had on that stock. I'm looking to feed that into another stock and compound that 2,700% return somewhere else.
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, the other way to look at it, and it's like, I think in an ideal world, right? And again, it depends on who you are, your personality, and what your attitude to risk is, and all these kind of things. But in an ideal world, you would cut your losers, as you said, yeah. And what you would do is you would add to your winners. So when you've got your stocks with £1,000 in each, when one starts going really well and it gets up, say, 10, 15, 20%, and it puts out a good trading update, you buy more of that one. So you're sort of pushing the winners, yeah? You're really getting behind the winners. So then you're getting even more bang for your buck on that winning position, yeah? Which makes the loser less of a problem. And obviously, if you have a, you know, some kind of rule for, I don't know, 20% stop loss, whatever. Personally, I don't use them. I think it's really up to the individuals. But I think of the two things, not cutting losers gives you less damage to your portfolio than cutting winners too early or not adding to winners, if that makes sense.
Yes. Yeah.
That makes sense, mate. Yeah. And I mean, I'm a huge believer. And funnily enough, this is a Robbie Burns technique, although he's very much into stop losses. So that's where me and him would definitely differ. He's one of the big things Robbie Burns is into is adding to winners. So, you know, you buy the stock, it starts moving up, it does a breakout, whatever, buy more of it. And then you're pushing the position and you're getting a really compounded, weighty position that then goes up. And then obviously once it starts getting really silly, yeah, you start top slicing it and reducing it and whatever. And at some point you might sell the whole thing. But you should, personally, I would never sell. I mean, occasionally I have sold the whole thing, but nearly always when I do that, I regret it, yeah? And it's always, I find it's always better really to scale into a position and to scale out of a position.
I agree with that, Pete. Definitely.
A lot of agreement here today, mate. It's very worrying. Mind you, we did have a good rough.
No, because that's the way to do it. Because the thing is, some people... regardless of fundamentals and regardless of using technical analysis, it is very, very difficult to call the top. It's very, very difficult to call the bottom. You know what I mean? So I have a price range that I'm happy to purchase a stock in, and I always try and look for that. And if it doesn't get to that range and the news actually catalyst actually starts before I can actually get that, I'll start to lump in. But if it's in the buy zone and I'm not quite sure where the bottom is, I'll scale in. And equally, a lot of the time, unless there's a takeover, which is what's happening with a few of my stocks of late, I'm holding it until I think, well, you know what, this is maxed out now, and I start to trim it, or I'll sell out because there's no more data coming regarding the takeover. I don't want to wait 12 months for the takeover to happen. But, you know, that's unfortunately what happens sometimes, Pete. You've got to be patient with these stocks, and you've got to scale in and you've got to scale out.
Whether you are an experienced or new investor, you know how valuable it is to conduct portfolio enhancing analysis and to have easy access to data that will give you the edge. As a Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener, you can access an exceptional offer via ShareePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. This special Twin Peaks offer is available to new subscribers only, and you can subscribe using the promo code Twin Peaks. The incredible and exclusive offer means that monthly subscribers will get their second month free, and annual subscribers will get their 13th month free. Sign up and subscribe to SharePad today using the Twin Peaks promo code, and you can save up to £69. Visit shareScope.co.uk/sharepad for further details and subscribe to the investing and trading analysis and data you need.
And, you know, unfortunately, sometimes we get to the point where our analysis isn't as good as it should be. And that's what leads to us selling out too early or entering too early. Or, you know, on the rare occasions or on a lot of occasions for the people, all they're doing is simply following someone else in the stock. And because they followed that person into the stock, they've got no conviction. So the minute the stock has a dip, or that person they followed into the stock sells the stock a week, a month later, they're then out of the stock. It's like, what happened? Oh, it didn't quite meet my criteria, so I've sold it.
Yeah.
So it wasn't an investment. It was just a trade. Are you with me?
Well, it was just
I'm not that interested in trading, Pete, at the moment. I will do the odd bit around the fringes. I never talk about those bits and pieces. But I'm looking to buy something now and just leave it alone for 2 or 3 or 4 years. You know, the most boring stock I've got in the portfolio right now is Bunzl. And it's moving towards a 52-week high. Nobody's interested in it. And I'm happy that no one's interested in it. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah. I mean, it does, you know, the fact is it's going up, isn't it? Hey, mate, we all talk about some stocks, did we?
Mm-hmm.
Do we need... I need to say a shout-out to somebody. That's to Ian Palmer, who's actually... quite a new listener that only sort of discovered us fairly recently. Just by sheer coincidence, he sort of sent me an email the other day, and it turned out a load of us were meeting in the pub on Friday, just gone, at the White Hart. And I said to Ian, you know, do you want to come along and join us? And he lives down the road from me, not far. So he came and joined us. Lovely bloke, went really well. So hello, Ian. I hope you're all right, mate, and I hope you're enjoying this podcast.
Cool beans, Pete. I want to quickly talk about Morrisons and what's happened with Morrisons since we last spoke, and what it's triggered, Pete.
Yeah.
There's currently three different sets of private equity entities looking to purchase Morrisons. And I suspect that we're going to get some more news probably before or by Friday. Regarding that, just to remind people, we're recording this on Tuesday for a change. It's Tuesday the 13th of the 7th of the 7th month of the year, which is July, by the way. So we might get some news by Friday, if not next week, regarding what's going on with the initial offer. But add another bid. They're saying they're going to look after the farmers, they're going to look after this, and blah, 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 blah. But there's going to be lots more news coming out regarding that. But what I love about what's happened with Morrisons and this takeover is that no one was interested in Morrisons. There was very few investors the stock market that was interested in
Morrisons. I even talked about it on the podcast. Yeah, I wasn't interested enough to buy it.
Absolutely sleepy and boring. But now everyone's thinking, oh, what? You know what? Actually, what it's saying is that our supermarkets are undervalued, right? So some people have started looking at Sainsbury's and also looking at Tesco's, and some people have made purchases in that. It doesn't mean there's going to be a takeover overnight or whatever, but at least they're looking to buy things that are of quality, that actually generate a good turnover in revenue, that are profitable and can increase and pay dividends, and not just chasing racy stocks. Yeah?
Oh, yeah. No.
So that's the bit I wanted to share. Cool. But next few days or week, but it's going to be interesting July, I think, for Morrisons and what's going on. Depending on the news in the next couple of weeks, I may decide to take some off the table, because I did buy a chunk of them. Quite a big size, just for the recovery and also for the dividend, because I had the cash sitting on the portfolio doing nothing, and I wanted to just try and generate 10%. I'm nearer to 50% at the minute regarding my investment in that, but it's early days yet, Pete.
Yeah, I mean, it's a difficult one, isn't it? Because what I tend to do is not sell. I mean, I tend to nearly always sell in the market. I very, very rarely wait to get the money from the company doing the takeover or whatever, yeah, because it always takes so flipping long. And I talked about this on my website, on the trades page, I think it was, or maybe on my, actually, I think it was on the weekend blog that I wrote on Sunday. I wrote on there that, you know, I had a bad experience with a company called Dematec, DTK, many years ago now. It's probably 8, 10 years ago, where they got a takeover. And I thought, oh, you know, I'll just wait for the money to come through. What an error that was. I mean, I had to fill out all these Israeli tax forms and stuff. I mean, bloody ridiculous. Honestly, and so I sort of learned my lesson. And that was one of the reasons I was really keen to get rid of Telit TCM once I was pretty confident the deal had gone through. I mean, I may be too early even as it is, but I just thought, I don't want to get caught on that again, because it drove me absolutely bonkers. It was just so annoying, you know? And there's just no need for it. It's like, just get the damn thing shifted and move the money into something else, you know?
No, I think that's cool, Pete. Another stock I want to mention. I don't own this particular stock, but we've been talking for a while now, for those that are new on this podcast, about which stocks have done well during the pandemic and, you know, lockdown. And one of the main, two of the main sectors that have really, really won have been DIY stocks, and also Pete's already mentioned healthcare / pet stocks. And another stock that I rarely see people talk about, Pete, and again, this is what people need to do: go and find the stocks that no one's talking about, ladies and gents.
Yeah, you know,
the people that are talking about that stock every single day, yawn, yawn, yawn. Find the stocks that they're not talking about, right? An unscheduled update today, Pete, from Howden Joinery, HWDN.
Oh, yeah.
Raised its full-year earnings estimates after the first-year half sales.
Wow.
Yeah? Upmarket kitchen supply. Everyone's like, got all this extra cash. Oh, I'll do my kitchen up. You know what I mean? Oh, I'll do this up. I'll do that.
Well, yeah, I'm not going on holiday.
I'm not going on holiday. I'm not driving the car as much. I'm not filling the tank up, blah, 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 right? Group revenues for the first 6 months of the year, Pete, were almost £785 million against last year's £465 million, yeah?
Wow.
And £653 in the same period of 2019. That's a massive, massive rise, Pete.
That's stunning. Yeah. That's absolutely stunning.
So for people that haven't looked at that stock before, they're booming, mate. They're doing absolutely phenomenally well. And that's another share that's hit an all-time high. At some point today.
What's the code for that?
I gave it you already, mate. HWDN.
Sorry, mate. HWDN. Hey, that reminds me, right? I got to say this because it just cracks me up every time I see it. Do you know that Wix advert where they advertise kitchens?
Yeah.
On the telly? And you know it's got like the four, I think it's girls, four girls, might be three girls and a bloke on a Zoom call, yeah? And one of them, they ask her about a kitchen. No, she's got a funny background or something. And she freezes. It's just, I love it. She freezes like holding a cup of coffee. And they'll go, oh, she's frozen. And then a cat walks across in front of her. It's just brilliant. They go, but a cat's moving. And she's literally just like not moving. And
yeah,
just,
she's embarrassing once they get off the Zoom call.
It's a variation on one they were doing before, but I just love it. It just cracks me up every time I see it. Anyway,
Pete, I'm going to quickly do some shout outs, mate. The charity. And once again, ladies and gents, thank you ever so much for your continued support of the Memphis charity fundraising we're doing. Pete and I are doing, if you're new, we're doing a Twin Pete's challenge. We're just asking anyone that's enjoyed the podcast to make a donation of a couple of pounds. You can do it anonymously. If you want to donate a pound, donate a pound. If you donate a tenner, 100 quid, donate whatever you can afford to do.
Whatever. Yeah.
We're sitting at £4,119 at the moment. We broke through the barrier of 4,000. We're pushing on now towards our next goal of £5,000. We're excluding the ones that have done multiple donations. I think we've probably just breached 100 different people that have made donations so far, Pete.
Fantastic.
We've still got 2,400 of you that could donate a pound. That'd be absolutely smash us over the 5,000 barrier. We had a donation just 5 hours ago This person's anonymized it, and he's just said he's called himself grateful listener to the Twin Peaks podcast. Thanks not only for the investment insight highlighted in each podcast, but the reminder that the biggest investment we can make is showing love and kindness to others. Little gestures go a long way. And that person donated £36 and gift aided £9. Whoever you are, blessed. Thank you ever so much. That's really, really kind of you. And fantastic words there. That sentiment just is very, very powerful. And that really resonates with me.
Oh, it's just brilliant. And it's inspirational for us doing these podcasts as well. You know, this kind of response to the charity, it's just brilliant. And we're so pleased with the way people, I mean, I talk to loads of people all the time, and I know they really enjoy our podcast, and I'm so pleased. And the feedback they've given has really helped us to get it where it is and to improve it and whatever, you know.
Absolutely, mate. Absolutely. I mean, we've got another chap here who's not given his full name, David, and his simple words are, and poignant words are, thanks for the podcast, guys, £30 and £7 gift aid. I'm not sure what we've done, but we've got another donation from...
Thanks, David.
Thank you, David. From Leija. Yeah, not Learjet, Pete. Leija, yeah. Right? We gave a shout-out in the last podcast. Thanks again, chaps, for your ongoing content and promotion of the broader balanced view in stocks, mindset and life in general. And Leija donated £25. We've got a donation from...
That's Lawrence, I think, isn't it?
Thanks, Lawrence. Yeah, thanks, yeah, Lawrence. Thank you. At Leija on Twitter. We've got a £20 plus £5 gift aid from Raj Ramira. Thanks, Twin Peaks, for keeping my spirits up and a token of my gratitude is this donation. And Terry, kindness breeds kindness, and a big thank you on the behalf of small investors for sharing your investing experience and great personal thoughts about GSK, slow burning companies. God bless. Take care. And you donated a fiver. Brilliant, mate. Thank you so much.
Terry. Thanks, Raj. That's great.
We've got that guy that seems to be keep giving us money, and we love him for it. I put a post out for him because he's such a wonderful guy. Elric, Mr. at Leamington Investor. He's now sitting at nearly £800 that he's donated, Pete, via the subscriptions that he gets from his various websites that he's got. So I just want to give Leaming Investor a big shout out. I'm going to be paying him a visit at some point when I'm next up towards seeing my parents in Manchester. And if not, I'm going to get him down to Leicester to meet the people at Memphis, hopefully. I think that's the least I can do regarding what he's done for that
charity. Oh, he's been amazing. Been amazing.
He's been absolutely
amazing.
Thanks, Eric. So big shout out there for Leaming Investor again. And he's forewarned me that he's going to be donating some more beyond what he's donated already. So thank you ever so much. Scrumpy 222 donated again.
Yep, Scrumps, nice one, thanks, mate.
Yeah, 222, brilliant for you to do that. And we had Dorset Squirrel. I enjoy the podcast,
Squirrel,
so thank you. And great that you are helping such a good cause with your fundraising. £30 plus gift aid. And Chris Hoyer Miller, thanks for the great work on the podcast. £20 plus gift aid.
Thanks, Chris, and thanks, Dorset Squirrel.
Everybody that's joined the Twin Peaks Challenge community, thank you ever so much. If you haven't joined us yet, there's still plenty of time. We're going to be running this till the end of December-ish. Yeah. We're trying to donate over 5K is our next target, and then we push on from there. Ultimately, we want to get it as high as possible. So if you can donate and you enjoy these podcasts, just make a small donation. If you want to anonymize it, but we'll give you a shout out if you share your name and all the rest of it as well. But thank you all for donating so far. Really, really generous of you and really, really kind. Thank you all for your support. The disabled children will really, really appreciate it.
It's fantastic. Mate, we'll do some stocks. I got some here.
Go for it.
One I'll just throw in quick, which is me ramping my own stock, yeah?
No,
Which is Telecom Plus TEP. It keeps falling. I'm sorry. I just think it's getting ridiculously low. I'm just throw that in there. If people want to look at it, they can look at it. If they don't want to look at it, they don't have to look at it. Anyway, right. Right, what was I going to... Right, okay, here's a weird one for you, right? I don't normally talk about stuff that's quite speculative and quite early stage, yeah? But I've got one that I'm keeping my eye on, you know? Sort of tempted that I might even bung a couple of grand at it or something. Do you know what I mean? Just like a small bit to get me going. But I I'm warming up to that. I'm sort of, you know, because it's not a sort of thing I normally do, but it's one I really like look of, and that is Creo Medical, Creo. And what I like about this one, I've been sort of looking at it for years, right? Been tracking it. It's what I said earlier about this longitudinal research of tracking individual stocks and how they're progressing, you know, how the companies are progressing and what they're doing. It does like sort of like, I'm not even sure what it does to be quite honest, but it sort of does like surgical, you know, like keyhole surgery and stuff like that. It does like catheters and sort of keyhole surgery type kind of things, I think with cameras and whatever, to sort of make surgery slicker and better and whatever, yeah. And I love it because they've got a product called Speedboat, and that always just sticks in me. I love the name Speedboat as a product. It's just like ridiculous, but I love it.
Surgical endoscopy, right?
What is it?
Surgical.
Surgical endoscopy. So that, yeah, that is in like a camera
Or
feeding.
if you come from a different part of the world, endoscopy is a proper
Yeah,
pronunciation.
endoscopy. So it's like shoving a thing with a camera on it into a hole and you're doing some cutting at the same
Why
time,
do you
right?
always have to go towards stocks that are putting things in holes, Pete? What's the matter with you?
Mate, you know me. You know me. Don't, mate,
Dear, oh dear.
you probably don't want to get me on that subject.
Move on, move on.
Anyway, move on. So what's really interesting about Creo, I think at the moment it is not making profit. I think it's selling stuff, yeah. But it's moving to commercialize its products. And it's already got approvals, I think, in quite a few countries. And I think it's looking to move into the US, and it's got like a US distributor and whatever. And if you look at how revenues are growing and stuff, and you sort of look at the when it's likely to move into profit, it's pretty obvious it's going to move into profit before too long. And I think we could see the profits shoot up because the chances are it's going to sell a lot of stuff and the revenues are going to rise fast and the profits will rise fast. So I think it's a really interesting looking little company. So it's something just for people to have a poke around at. I don't hold it, but you know, I'm interested in it, definitely. Do you
Okay,
know that one?
the ticker. I've not looked at that one, Pete. The ticker symbol CREO.
Yeah.
It's rolled over a little bit, Pete, since beginning of June.
Yeah.
It was up there at 220. It's currently sitting at 184, 185. Was there some recent news or something that's caused that to just dip a little bit, or is it just a case of it's
I
had a
read,
breather?
mate, I'd imagine it's the same old story where, you know, we're getting into summer, it's an AIM stock, quite speculative, people sort of, you know, there's low volumes, illiquid and whatever.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's just an idea that people can have a think about. Do you know, I got
Okay.
another one I wrote on my list, right? Halfords, HFD,
Oh,
yeah?
you saw the tech thing they did today, did you? Yeah.
Well, do you know what? I was going to mention that because I actually wrote it on my little list of notes for potential things to talk about in TPI 53. I actually wrote that down probably like a week ago or whatever it was. And what I said was HFD still cheap, yeah? And I thought, you know, going back a week ago, whatever, I looked at like the forward PE and the 2 year forward PE. And from memory, it was just like ridiculous. It was like still, say, a forward PE of 14 fall into 12, which for what they've achieved and the changes they've done within the business, I thought, my God, that still looks good. And it's got excellent momentum in the actual share price chart and whatever. And then, as you say, there was the news today where effectively they've invested and created some software for scheduling vans to go out and put tires on people's cars and whatever. Yeah, like their mobile repair service, mobile van service, mobile tire service, whatever it is. And they developed this software, presumably over several years, to do that. Well, they seem to be now selling that software to other companies. So there's like a whole new business stream they've created from nowhere that no one will have thought about before. So who knows what that can do?
This is the sort of thing, Pete, when we talk about sum of parts and the business value and all the rest of it. When a company innovates and adds another layer that no one was talking about before, that can be such a catalyst for that company going forward. And people look and think, oh, you know what? It was quite lowly priced last March, and it's already had a good run. If this actually works, it's called. I'll read it as it states in the RNSP. Alford's established a new business to offer customer-centric field service management software. One of the largest independent suppliers of tyres to the replacement tyre market in North America is the first customer. That to me is like, oh my gosh. If I already owned that stock, I'd be like dancing, mate.
Oh, yeah? Brilliant news.
And if it was lowly priced, I'd be buying it. But now I'm thinking, okay, let me just watch and see what happens with that. That to me is a major, major event regarding that particular company. And from being a boring staid or with service cars, we're now serving bikes, blah, 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 blah. That could be, we don't know yet because it's all about execution. That could be a serious stimulus regarding revenue going forward for them.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the chances are they won't really get meaningful revenues from it for a few years, but it's just another string to the bow. Mate, have you got SharePad open?
I haven't, mate, no.
Okay, don't worry. We'll move on from that then. Right, number one.
Mate, this is the last one, Pete, because we've absolutely creamed the time again.
Mate, I need to just throw in a quick lateral thinking thing as well, so I'll be fast, right?
No. Give me a stock.
Another one, which I think is a stock I've mentioned.
Just give me a stock, Pete. No lateral, mate. Come on.
Yeah, I think I've mentioned... I'll do the lateral next time. I think a stock I've mentioned before is Rest, R-S-T, yeah? Now, the thing that struck me about this one, I don't hold it, the thing that struck me about it, in their recent update or whatever, they said they are looking at 100 potential acquisition targets. So they are looking, what they do is they do like, their sort of core business is storage of documentation and stuff. That's how they started off, where they sort of...
Can I interrupt you 1 second, Pete? Do you not even look at my tweets? Do you not realise I own this stock?
Do you?
Yes.
So funny. That is so funny.
I've already put it out on Twitter and all the rest of it, yeah.
Oh my God, that's you know, we do this a lot, don't we? Where I talk about a stock and you go, yeah, I've got that or whatever.
Yeah, well, at least I declared this one before you start kicking off it, mate.
Yeah. No, so what Restore do is their original business was like storing documentation and stuff because lots of companies, so like a big company, like, I don't know, like an Adobe, no, won't be, that's a bad example, but like a big company like
the NHS, mate, were recycling, the MOD were recycling all the papers. Yeah. They were storing them in basically old hangars, you know, back in the day, you know?
Well, that's the thing. And it's
now
like,
it's high tech. They're shredding it, they're recycling, they're getting into electronics as well. So they're getting all the recycling, all the component parts and all the rest of it. So yeah, it's loads going on.
Well, Restore have been around for, you know, probably doing this business model for at least 10 years, where basically it's like an outsourced storage thing where it's a lot cheaper for Restore to do it collectively for loads of companies than for companies to individually store the stuff themselves. And so they outsource it and basically Restore does it. But Restore's also moved to loads of other things. Like they're now getting big time into getting old phones and old computers and stuff and refurbishing it.
Yeah.
And this is what we talked about, I think, on the podcast before when we mentioned it. But they were going into this whole thing of the circular economy and whatever, which is going to be massive. Do you know what? Here's a good example. I ordered a new mattress yesterday from Dreams, right? And the recycling part of it, where they come and they take my old mattress away, that cost me another £40 for them to take that mattress away. But what they actually do is they smash that old mattress up and they take out bits they can use to recycle them and whatever. And this whole recycling thing is just going to become bigger and bigger and bigger.
Absolutely. I absolutely agree, Pete. I've covered myself regarding that particular sector and recycling. I've got Restore. And I've also got Renewy, which I bought last year quite cheaply. And that's the reasons why I've got those particular stocks.
I don't think I've got any of a thing on recycling, which is a bit stupid, really. I go on about it all the time. But I can't hold everything.
We can't hold everything, mate. Okay. Pete, we're in 1:22, mate. We're done. Another hour and 22 minutes. For those that listen to this podcast in two bits, thank you very much for persisting with us. For those of you that go for long walks and long drives, Thank you for listening in one go. For those of you that give us feedback, and good, bad, or indifferent feedback, please keep providing us with that feedback. We
Thank
want to
you.
thank you all for your support. We're wishing you a fantastic summer. Pete and I actually managed to get through this podcast without mentioning England and Euro 2020, and the fact that Pete broke his promise. He listened and watched the actual game, and England lost.
I
So if
jinxed
you want to
it.
blame anybody, blame Wheelie Dealer.
I jinxed it. Totally.
Okay. Ladies and gents, wishing you well. Take care. God bless. Do what you
Thanks, everyone.
can for anybody else that you can. Stay healthy, stay safe, and enjoy Freedom Day when it arrives. Get out in the countryside, hug a tree, walk in the sunlight, enjoy yourself. Take care. God bless. We'll see you in 2 weeks.
Thanks.
This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast was brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.